Phoenix. Bye-bye. Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
We're back. Welcome to Declare Your Independence. I'm here in Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAUT full studios of Freedom's Little Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. Okay, stop wars, home educate. Now, this is one, I'll tell you what's exactly going on. There was a effort on my part, a desire for me to make this statement right when the new Star Wars came out. During that weekend, we put up hundreds of these all over the valley, and we sent bunches, you know, 100 or more around the country that got, you know, some airtime. And the big thing is, in New Hampshire, there's a bunch of that we sent out there for them to use because of all the presidential campaigning and so on, and Iowa, and we're having some fun. Now, all of a sudden, I can see the traffic. Now, the QR code that you see there, we only have on some of these signs, you know, the nice big ones. It says Defending Archimedes, and it goes, and all it does is go to the page that shows us making the signs. Now, we have the special edition there. It's ready and so on, but I didn't turn it on or forward the link to the new site, and the reason was this. I originally thought that Defending Archimedes would be a resource. Here's all this great stuff that you can get and go and do and have. And there is. There's a lot of stuff that we can put up there. But every single one of the ones that have a lot of resources, they want your child's DNA sample. I mean, you know, practically. They want to know who you are, what the email accounts, the account, and even like with Khan Academy, they reward. It's like a game. You know, it's like saying, Mobile Strike Force, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Mobile Attack, or Mobile Command, whatever the heck it is. It's a free app, advertising the crap out of it on football, NFL game. Yeah, get the free app. It's on your phone. You can do, you know, strike and this. When we get you, yeah, and it's an email data collection of we got you. You're on the list. Access, you know, oh, yeah, it's free. We just want access to your contacts, your pictures, your emails. And, you know, I totally agree. You know, I get it's free. Well, it's free. So you do all the work for them. The same thing is when they map individual minds. They are when they say the permanent record. This man, this is what they're talking about. Permanent record of. So I'm going, God, man, people need to be warned about this. You need to understand there's a philosophy and the truth is out there. I mean, there's enormous amounts of information, everything, the entire accumulative knowledge of, you know, a big, large percentage of everything humans have been able to create and have and do and learn is, you know, is a Netflix documentary or an internet search away. So I'm going, yeah, do we want to do that way? I need to have encrypted accounts. They don't need to know who I am. Well, you got to pay, fine. You know, here's my cryptocurrency if I get access to the encrypted account of the file if you don't know and suck it. Here at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas in the last few days, they had PIA. What is it? It's private internet access or something. It's a PIA. It was a company that Paul Pway from Airbits introduced me to the owners, the founders last year at the Consumer Electronics Show. We had them on, talked to them. You know, it's kind of very cool. It allows you to do anonymous browsing. So they had these cards that are free or, you know, fobs or whatever. They just say, here's free access to our anonymous. They don't know who you are browsing. What did they see? Now, the individuals are supposedly, you know, unidentified, and they used a technology kind of like AirBits does to where it's an encrypted account. They don't know who you are. And NSA comes in and says, give us your access. You know, okay, there it is. Yeah, but what's all of it? We don't know. But who are they? We don't know. Peace out. We can turn it over. It's all encrypted. We can't do that. Like LavaBit. The email guys, they just said, nope. We're good. You're not allowed to, we don't even know who they are ourselves. And, you know, he did. He had access. They wanted to give him access. And he just said, you know what? We just shut it down because I'm not turning it over. So I'm going, okay. Okay. Well, how does that equate here? Well, what were people doing with these private accounts? What were they doing? Well, they're like, you know, what they found out that they were doing is they were going on Grindr and Tinder and, you know, having sexual relations and, you know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas kind of thing, using their private internet access account. And I'm going, gee, I'm so shocked. So this is, what does the government think? Damn it. You know, how would they even know that? Because Tinder was getting, because they do have access to that. They were seeing the bandwidth that was going from these different services and so on through the internet coming in the PIA or got, I don't know how they even got the story, you know, but that's what they were writing about. So I don't care. You know what? They're going to find terrorists in some hotel bedroom bed or something. My solution is, you know, just let the free market have a solution, but we haven't had a free market. Patrick Wood, as much as he understands and as much as he knows these guys and as much, you know, there's still a generational thinking of there's got to be some system. We got to go and attack the system. We got to go talk about to the system. How much time and effort do I go into the political system? Where can I direct that effort into just a concept like the non-aggression principle, like the philosophy of liberty that you own yourself, like, you know, like that. Where do we do that? Alessandro Fascio from Italy just sent me an email. He got the information that we sent him about all the way that we use. I mean, it's a method, a way that we use the Second Amendment, gun rights, you know, because they don't have a Second Amendment in Europe. They don't care. The second what? The gun rights here in America to inject libertarianism, libertarian thought, voluntarism, leave me aloneist kind of thing into the rhetoric here in American politics. Well, how do you, you know, he wanted to get libertarianism into Europe. He couldn't figure, he goes, they're so short. I go, it's gun rights. I trust me, man. Don't trust me, whatever. I'm telling you, you want to take this on, use the ability to defend yourself against aggression as the beginning and the understanding of what freedom is really about. You write about gun rights in Europe, it will freaking explode. Now, of course, they'll try and paint you as you're the, you know, knuckle-dragging NRA, GOP, Republican, Neanderthals from south of the Mason-Dixon line of blah, 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 blah. And I go, who are those guys there? I go, yep, it's a fascist. It's a neo-Nazis and so on. They always equate them with gun rights. I go, fine. Take it on. Don't be that. Do it as a philosophical thing to libertarianism, I'll show you how. Send him all the DVDs, send him the printed information, all the kind of stuff. And he's going, holy crap. And I go, yeah, spark a little bit. Well, he's going to be speaking at Anarcho-Poco too. Mark Victor told Jeff, he says, man, you didn't know this guy and the articles that he wrote for Freedom's Phoenix and all that kind of stuff. All of a sudden, boom, he's going to go down. We're going to hang out in Anarcho-Poco. Now, I'm trying to hook him up to be in Marrakesh, Morocco. You know, I got to look this up. I keep saying I'm going to look it up, and I never do. Okay, let's see. Marrakesh. Let's put it up here. All right, Marrakesh. Marrakesh. How do you spell Marrakesh? Marrakesh, Morocco. How do you spell Morocco? Okay, so map. Now, let's do this. City in Morocco. Well, Morocco's not that big anyway, so let's go ahead and see if we can see where this is. So it's not on the coast. All right, there's Morocco. Morocco is on the other side of Spain, the Rock of Gibraltar. Gibraltar is Morocco. That country there, Morocco, Marrakesh is, you know, how far is that? Looks like, I don't know, less than 50 miles from the coast. All right. So Marrakesh is in Morocco. I just want to make sure. So we're going to go there and hang. I'll tell you all about it.
This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I specialize in helping you find the real estate that fits your needs. Whether you are looking to purchase a home or a piece of land, whether it's in town or a rural setting, I can help you find exactly what you are looking for. Most of us are aware of the turbulent times ahead and will need to settle in a place that will suit our particular desires, not only to protect our families, but to thrive in the coming downturn of the economy. Unfortunately, that time is not in the future, but it is upon us, and if you are going to get ahead of the game, now is the time to prepare. Qualifying options for new loans are narrowing, the dollar is being devalued every day, and living expenses are on the rise. So I have created a useful tool on my webpage at DonnaHancock.com that will allow you to search for properties at your leisure that are of interest to you. Simply click on the Search MLS tab at the top of my webpage to begin your search today. Start preparing for your future, and when you are ready to move forward with your home or land buying purchase, we can work together to get you and your family ready to flourish. Feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819, and let's get started today.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
I can see it. You can see what's happening and hear it be a coming. Okay, when you got Texas billionaires buying up 38,000 acres of Idaho land, I'm going, what? There's not enough land in Texas? What the hell's up with that? You know, so I'm going, okay. Well, whatever. You know, we'll learn more about that. We'll see if we can get somebody on that. Panic is building. Bank of America admits, asks, how bad could this get? Now, this is something that, you know, you'll see everybody, it's always, no, things are fine. We're at the bottom end, still not the top of, and kind of don't worry, nothing to see here. Move along and buy more crap. Okay? I mean, right up until the day that it's over. I mean, it's amazing. These guys are just mouthpieces. Okay, so let's see, this is Tyler Durden, this is Zero Hedge, all right? I just read this one short paragraph, and you'll kind of see, what the hell did they say? Just 1 month ago, Bank of America's equity strategist, Savita Subramanian, told Barron's to stay the course and to expect, this is a month ago, and expect a 2,200 year-end target on the S&P based on a year-end 125 EPS forecast and an implied 17.6-time forward multiple. Incidentally, her 2015 year S&P 500 forecast was an identical 2,200 of the 7.6 and multiplied. What? What the hell are they talking about? You know, it's just, and then you go through blah, 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 and it comes down. Well, our conclusion is that, well, all these other factors have created a difficult backdrop for corporate profitability, and we forecast fourth quarter EPS growth of a negative 1% year-over-year consensus. You know, it's gobbledygook BS of crap. I get an email that shows Senior Vice President at Moody's now. He got into promotion, my brother-in-law. You know, Donna's brother, John, at Moody, he was on CNBC Business up there going yakking about whatever. And I'm trying to, he tried to simplify it because he knew I was on his shoulder going, what? But anyway, he goes, he says, here are a bunch of companies that, you know, have liquidity problems, which means they're, you know, cash poor and, you know, downward spiral. They don't have enough money to make their house payment kind of thing. So he's going, they're in trouble. And in past years, this list that we've generated, 40% of these companies are out of business or gone bankrupt in within the 12 months. So they're like, really? So he's got. So these guys are, I mean, and to piece that out of a freaking 15-minute interview or something, I'm like, what the heck? What's the language that these guys use? It's like not only do they hedge their accounts, they hedge their statements. I mean, it's a hedge on top of a hedge of what the hell do they say? But the bottom line is that even Moody's is coming out saying, yeah, there's, you know, there's mine canaries flopping over dead everywhere. So I'm going, all right. So John had that going on. And I asked, hey, you want to come on the show? Yeah, probably not. There's just so many. All right, we'll just go over some of the headline news, and I want to finish reading the Bundy thing. Texas cops released video showing them attacking man for filing a complaint while recording. You know, he's like, hey, man, they were on me because I recorded. I'm going to hear record about you, you know, saying I can't record. And so they beat the crap out of him. So they release, okay, yeah, what'd you think was going to happen? CEO, valuations are at crazy levels like nothing I've seen over my career. Now, this is, they're talking about gold and silver. Now, you know, skip to the end, blah, 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 blah. Since I have been in the business for 34 years, I have not seen the hate on silver and gold that we are now experiencing. The valuations we are seeing in the mining sector are at crazy levels where you can buy ounces in the ground of gold for less than $10, which is nothing I've seen over my career. See, when they when you got assets or they do a public offering on a mine, or they go out and they test it and they assay it and they, you know, analyze it, okay, it's like you watch Gold Rush and they drill it and they go, okay, well, you should get, you know, $10 a yard or $40 a yard or $100 a yard of dirt here. You run it through the plant and you get this much, and there it is. And that field out there, you know, see all that pay out there that we're going to, you know, bulldoze and get and everything, it's worth this much. And then you go, okay, well, I tell you what, I want to buy into part of your mine and the stock of the mine, kind of, and I get $10 an ounce. It's just not mine yet. This is what made one of the reasons why Doug Casey is so filthy, stinking rich. Doug Casey would go to these mines all over the world. You know, Central, South America, kind of, you know, he would actually go. That was the one thing that he told me it made him different. He goes, because I actually go. I go and just tell, you know, give me a pan, man. I mean, you know, get my assayer out there and take a look at how much. Okay, it's worth this much. I invest this much. I always come out ahead. It's all good. What's it at now? Man, it's down, 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 down. You don't want to buy, like, Pan America. Pan, P-A-N, I think it's a stock ticker, a P-A-N, and I always have it up, and I go check and see, just so you know, I'll pull it up for you. All right, here we go. I go, let's see. Gold, let's see, it's silver mine, I put Pan. I think it's P-A-N. Pan, silver mine. Let me see if that pops it up. Yep, Pan American Silver Corp. All right, so we go in there, and I just want to see what's the see if they'll give me the stock market on it and see what's its operating NASDAQ. It's at $6.10. Now, 6.10, this thing is gone. It's been 2-3 times that, okay? And it keeps going down. It goes down to, like, you know, 5-something or whatever, and then it shoots up to 7. Well, that's an enormous difference in percentage. If you're buying a bunch of this stock now while it's down to 6, and it goes up to, you know, 12, well, you just doubled their money, your money. So why aren't people buying a bunch of this? For some reason, they think, or pushing it down. Now, you watch this one. I just watch this one company. You know, I just look at this. You know, because I just, you know, because, you know, what a, it's one of the biggest companies, and I have friends that's made a bunch of money on this one. So I'm going, okay, I don't, because I just go buy the stuff, and then I got to worry about it and, you know, report and fill out forms and taxes, whatever, I don't care. So I'm going, okay, but I look at this. What is the value of the silver in the ground, or at least mining companies? And then you look at gold and so on. They're hating on it so much, it's getting so cheap, it's like, wow. So a lot of these guys are just buying into it. What's going to happen? Well, they'll suppress it more. If you don't have enough resources and gold, silver goes to $9 an ounce and this stock goes down lower, what are you going to do? They're arguing in this article it's so low that it doesn't matter if it goes down. It's going to shoot up and go stupid later anyway. Then what do? Yep, cash controls. I'm sorry, it's in the stock and you're not allowed, and you sold short the housing, and we said you're grandfathered in and you could keep, but you got to sell. I've been through this before. I don't trust these guys for nothing. So what do? Because I'm an unsophisticated dip-dong, I don't know better. You know, that's not my thing. You know, and the fundamentals don't matter anyway. I'm going, I don't trust them. Just buy some Bitcoin and silver. And I'll ratchet it back and forth. And I talked about this. I keep, how many ounces of silver do you get per Bitcoin? So I'm going, all right, that's what I keep track of. And I could look at it this morning. I haven't done it yet. See, I go up to my little computer here. And I put... Dang, I get my mic in the way. It went from... When I started, I bought a bunch of Bitcoin with silver. Silver was 16 ounces per Bitcoin. Now it's up to 32. When it hits 33, I don't care what anybody says. I'm going to take some more silver back because just out of principle. But, you know, this is... And it could be today, tomorrow, to sometime, especially pushing down silver and Bitcoin goes up.
What's up next? Visit the Liberty Radio Network program guide to find out at shows.lrn.fm. That's shows.lrn.fm.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
And we're right back. I'm sitting here doing email and kind of stuff. And, man, lots of things going on. People are getting it. Here we go. All right. What I want to do is go ahead and continue reading Justin Raimondo's article that was in American Conservative about Ammon Bundy, what he's doing up there. And it kind of in the first hour, we went through a little bit of it. And we're just talking about the Oregon-Harney Basin, and that really, one, first, it belonged to the natives, and then a white man screwed him out of it, and, you know, whatever. But the refuge that the federal government is going on about wouldn't exist if it wasn't for the ranchers. They're the ones that protected it and made sure that it's there and so on because, well, they're using this. That's what we were talking about with Technocracy Rising, technocracy.news of Patrick Wood, is that this whole thing is about, we rule you, you know, and we're going to take your land and do it, and it's just part of a land grab of it's the government's land. And that was one thing that Will Grigg wrote a really good article to explain, hey, man, it's the government's land. Well, who the hell's that? And who the hell said that they could even have land? What up with that? You know, so anyway, all right. As Ammon Bundy explains on his blog, in the 1970s, the Bureau of Land Management, BLM, and the Fish and Wildlife Service, FWS, launched their campaign of conquest. Ranchers were informed that grazing was inimical, I-N-I-M-I-C-A-L, okay, a new word we got to learn, to wildlife and had to be reduced, if not eliminated. Okay. 1970s, the Bureau of Land Management launched their campaign of conquest. Ranchers were informed that grazing was dangerous, I guess, or not compatible with wildlife and had to be reduced if not eliminated. Okay, so the battle was on, Sagebrush Rebellion. Out of a total of 53 permits, 32 were revoked. Wow. Grazing fees were raised sky high, and many ranchers were forced to give up their land. The irrigation system they had created, which had attracted birds and other wildlife to the area, was appropriated by the refuge. While the original refuge established by Teddy Roosevelt included only Malheur Lake, and neither the rivers whose waters flowed into it nor most of the land surrounding it. Today, it covers some 187,000 acres completely surrounding the Hammonds Ranch. Those who held on, including the Hammonds, were continually pressured to sell, but the hard-scrabble ranchers who had fought the developers, the state politicians, and the forces of nature to preserve their land and their way of life were not about to surrender to any army of bureaucrats and the urban elites who ran the environmental lobby. Their answer was a firm no way, no how. As 1980 rolled around, the feds came up with a new battle plan, taking a leaf from the playbook of the Israelis, who have seized Palestinians' water and dole it out in dribs and drabs to their Palestinian helots. The FWS, the Fish and Wildlife Service, was keen to acquire privately owned land on the nearby Sylvie's Plain, so the refuge diverted the water, channeling it into Malheur Lake. Lake levels rose, soon doubling, and over 30 ranches on the plain were utterly destroyed. Homes, barns, and the verdant pastures on which cows once grazed were underwater. This broke the back of the rancher resistance. Most came to the Fish and Wildlife Service and gave their land away for a song. It wasn't until 1989 that the waters began to recede. By then, the entire plain was in the grasping hands of the refuge. Still, the Hammonds refused to sell, and along with a few other holdouts, they began to develop a strategy of resistance. Susan Hammond, the matriarch of the family, began to research how the refuge managed its considerable resources. What she discovered was that the ostensible purpose of the refuge, to provide a habitat for the birds that might otherwise be endangered, was ill-served by refuge personnel. She dug out a 1975 study conducted by the Fish and Wildlife Service itself, as Bundy's blog notes, which showed that the policies pursued by the refuge and allied federal bureaucracies were driving the birds away. It turned out that private lands bordering the refuge provided a haven for four times as many geese and ducks as the federally held lands. Migrating birds turned up their beaks, so to speak, at the refuge and were 13 times more likely to alight and breed on ranchers' land. One of the reasons for this is that federal overseers have allowed carp to take over the waters of Malheur Lake and the streams that feed into it. Massive numbers of carp have invaded and destroyed a habitat which once contained grasses and aquatic plants that provided birds and animals with a steady diet. No more. As Oregon Public Broadcasting put it, scientists say Malheur Lake once provided expansive habitat for waterfowl and other migratory birds along the Pacific Flyway, but that was before common carp were introduced to the lake. These fish are native to Eurasia. Malheur wildlife biologist Linda Beck says the common carp was brought to the lake as early as the 1920s, likely as a reliable food source for people living in this arid region. Now the shallow Malheur Lake is mostly brown, open water, free of the plants that provide food, shelter, and nesting grounds for the birds. The lake's estimated carp population runs in the millions. The refuge, the BLM, and the FWS, which is a fish wildlife service, profit from this disaster by hiring commercial fishermen to come in and catch the carp, which is then sold in areas of the country where immigrant communities for whom carp is a favored foodstuff buy it. Forget the birds. It's the carp that is bringing in the money. Another big problem. Wow, really? Okay, so the BLM is encouraging the commercial fishing of the carp that is destroying the lake for the birds that they say is there while they're making money selling the carp to, the Asian communities. You can't make this stuff up, man. Another big problem, one that would come to figure prominently in the Hammond's legal problems, is the invasion of junipers, which are crowding out other plant species and turning what were once fields maintained by ranchers who regularly cleared the land for grazing in the forest. Junipers suck up water at an amazing rate. Juniper trees are very common up in the northern part of Arizona, too. Whatever. I know what they are. They're like scrubby, wide, low, like 10 foot, 12 foot high, semi kind of pine trees. They're kind of a cross between pine tree and mesquite or something, but they flourish in low water thing. They suck up all the water. Let's see. And turning what were once fields maintained by ranchers who regularly cleared land for grazing into forests. Junipers suck up water at an amazing rate, and the result is that those fields have now turned into desert. For years, environmentalists objected to cutting down the junipers because it might encourage grazing on public lands, and the federal bureaucracy's no-use policies encouraged the juniper invasion, which has now conquered over 6 million acres. Finally, the BLM got wise to the problem, but as with the carp invasion, they reacted far too late. This is another reason why the refuge is not popular with the bird population, who are losing their habitat and being driven out, along with the ranchers. Yeah, it's kind of like in the Nevada area. Like, oh, it's for the tortoises, which has nothing to do with. There's always something else, man. Liars, liars, pants on fire. Okay. And it isn't just the junipers that are hogging up all the water. In the early 1990s, the Hammonds applied for and were granted water rights in an area adjacent to the refuge by the state authorities. The BLM and the FWS went ballistic, with the latter challenging the water rights in Oregon State Circuit Court. They lost, and that's when the bureaucrats really started going after the Hammonds. So the Hammonds, got some water rights and having cattle and kind of whatever, and man, somebody in the federal government didn't like that none too much. They sued them, went to state court, and they lost. So you go, yeah, well, we're the government. I went through this in northern Arizona. You remember I went to the League of Cities and Towns thing, and I went and met, Bob and I went up and met with some economic development guys in Yavapai County, and they made it clear. These housing development people that don't want to get annexed into the city of and our choice, we get some tax-based money, they're going to use the EPA against them and say that because they're not going into the municipal sewer system, that their septics and everything aren't good, and they're going to be fined into oblivion using the federal government. This is a tactic. This is how they do it. Wow. All right. Going after them. We come back, we'll get to where, from the government didn't win in court, so they're just using bureaucracy to go after them. We'll go ahead. I probably won't be able to finish this, but I tell you, Justin Raimondo, American conservative, what the Oregon standoff is really about.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Okay, we're right back. I want to get right to this article and skip to the end. Not long after being told by a judge, now this, we're talking about Justin Raimondo's article in American Conservative. This is about the, you know, Ammon Bundy and friends and the three percenters of Oregon and Idaho and so on up there at in Oregon, the refuge of up against the man. And this is just a continuation of they, them, those that wanted to get everybody off the land. Certainly in the West, it was, you know, the scrub land of desert, of high desert plateau of nothing, you know, was at least, you know, used for cattle or something. They're complaining about the deplorable conditions of, yeah, we need to put them in pens or stop eating meat or whatever the heck they want to do or say you can't. And why does the federal government even have all this land? Was that the way it was supposed to be? See, there's another thing, a Western state initiative of whatever. I'm finding out that a lot of this land in federal hands was supposed to be turned over to the states. And for some reason, they didn't exercise that right or do it. And this is bringing attention to a lot of that stuff. And it's going to start happening because, you know, it sucks to be, you know, under the government. Okay. Not long after being told by a judge to back off, the BLM and FWS, which is the Wildlife Service, fenced off the Hammond's Water, a brazenly illegal act. Now, keep in mind, they get a ruling. They go to court. State court says, back off, and then they fence it in anyway. Wow. The Hammond struck back, dismantling the fence. The feds called in the Harney County Sheriff, who arrested Dwight Hammond, charged with disturbing and interfering with federal officials, a felony. Dwight was jailed for 2 days. Brought before a federal judge, he was released without bail. The hearing was at first postponed, and then it looks like the government was so embarrassed by the illegal actions of the BLM and the FWS, the Fish and Wildlife Service, that they forgot to schedule another hearing date. The whole matter was dropped. But the feds had sent a message to the Hammonds that the government would not be bound by the law. The lawless behavior escalated. The FWS declared that the Hammonds would no longer have access to a road that enabled them to get to the northern reaches of their land. The only road went through the refuge. The road was barricaded, and FWS officials threatened the Hammonds, warning that there would be consequences if they tried to use the road. But that tactic backfired in the feds' faces when it was discovered that the road was owned by Harney County, not the refuge. Undeterred, the Energizer Bunnies of the federal bureaucracy revoked the Hammonds' grazing permit without cause, bypassing any legal procedures. According to Oregon state law, owners of livestock are not required to keep herds within a fence or control their movements. But the law doesn't apply to vindictive bureaucrats. A federal judge ordered the Hammonds either to fence their land or stop grazing. They were effectively forced to give up grazing on half their land. This was a major blow. It forced them to sell their ranch in order to feed their cattle. They purchased property with sufficient grass and with grazing rights on public land. The government soon counteracted, however, and the grazing rights were arbitrarily revoked. When the new owner of the Hammond Ranch suffered a heart attack, the Hammonds managed to reacquire it. But their battle was far from over. Indeed, they had just begun. In early fall 2001, the Hammonds called the local fire department and received permission for a controlled burn on their own property. This is a common method of controlling invasive growth, and in this case, it was aimed at getting rid of the junipers that were invading from the neighboring refuge, where little effort had been made to eradicate them, and gaining a foothold on the Hammond Ranch. That fire burned out of control onto refuge land. The Hammonds put it out with no help from BLM or refuge personnel. They didn't hear from the BLM or any other government agency until charges were brought 13 years later. Remarking on the incident, the judge said, well, the damage was juniper trees and sagebrush. There might have been $100 in damages, but it doesn't really matter. It doesn't affect the guidelines, and I'm not sure how much sagebrush $100 worth is, but I think Mother Nature's probably taking care of any injury. The Tri-State Livestock News quotes Susan Hammond as saying, we usually called the interagency fire outfits a main dispatch to be sure someone wasn't in the way or that weather wouldn't be a problem. Susan said her son Stephen was told that the BLM was conducting a burn of their own somewhere in the region the same day, and that they believed that there would be no problem with the Hammonds going ahead with their planned fire. The court transcript includes a recording from that phone conversation. Court testimony from a prosecution witness, a range conservationist, elicited the statement that the burn had improved the conditions on the BLM property. Environmentalists had put pressure on the BLM to cease controlled burns, and the conditions on the range had deteriorated, so that not only did the juniper invasion increase, but fires that did break out due to lightning or other factors burned much hotter, sterilizing the soil and leading to a profusion of weeds. When the problem became all too apparent, the BLM started a program of controlled burns. According to Aaron Maupin, a former BLM watershed specialist and range technician, due to intermingling of public and private land, collaborative burns are much more effective as opposed to trying to follow property lines. This is precisely what the first fire was all about. Not arson, but rational land management. I'll tell you, here in Arizona, this is a big deal. When these fire, because they won't allow it to burn, when it does burn, there's so much fuel, it sterilizes the land, it burns uncontrollably in communities and stuff, and make big, giant, and if you just let it go, or you do planned burns or controlled whatever, you'd be a lot better off. But managing the land is not the point. They're just, I'm not really sure what their point is. You know, we rule you, that's what their point. Court testimony from a prosecution witness, a range. I read that. The second fire, Dwight and Stephen Hammond were charged with starting a curtain. Now, remember, they come after them for a government agency charging them with felonies and so on 13 years after the fact. Now, so all this stuff coming out is not going well for the government here. The second fire, Dwight and Stephen Hammond were charged with starting, occurred in 06. It happened during, what is that? 7, 8, 9, 10, long time, past statute of limitations. I guess there's not when the federal government's involved. Happened during a lightning storm, and according to Susan Hammond, the reason was to protect their home and property. There was fire all around them that was going to burn our house and all the trees and everything. The opportunity to set a backfire was there, and it was very successful. It saved a bunch of land from burning. According to the feds, a grand total of 1 acre of federal land was affected. Although how this conclusion was reached is hard to say because fires were burning all over the place during the fierce lightning storm. The Hammond's neighbor, Ruthie Danielson, confirms this. Lightning strikes were everywhere. Fires were going off, she said. The morning after the fire, according to Ammon Bundy's write-up, BLM agents filed a police report with the Harney County Sheriff's Office charging Dwight and Stephen Hammond with arson. A few days passed without any action on the part of the authorities until a BLM ranger called Stephen and asked to meet with him in the town of French Glen for coffee. As Stephen was leaving the meeting, he was intercepted by the sheriff and a BLM ranger, arrested, and told to go back and collect his father, who was also being charged. Both were booked on several charges, essentially the same charges that would be brought 5 years later, minus the terrorism angle. The case was reviewed by the district attorney, who deemed the accusations unworthy of prosecution. All charges were dropped. In a just world, that would have been the end of the story. In the world we live in, however, it was the beginning of the end for the Hammonds. In 2011, the U.S. Attorney's Office, responding to agitation from the usual suspects, filed charges against Dwight and Stephen Hammond under the Clinton era, anti-terrorism effective death penalty of 1996. Damn. Which carries a minimum sentence of 5 years in prison for doing damage to federal property. The death penalty part is included because that's the maximum penalty. The bill was passed in response to the bombing of Oklahoma City federal building. I remember this. Death penalty for defacing federal property. I remember this. We talked about this. We go, you know, you watch what happens with this. Well, here it is. The government brought 9 charges against the Hammonds, including several alleged arsons over the years, conspiracy, utilization of aerial surveillance to further a terrorist act, and trying to destroy government property, including vehicles and fences. Locals were kept off the jury. Some jurors had to drive for close to 4 hours from Pendleton, 196 miles away. Now, if you go to the archive, I'm going to go ahead and continue reading this. All right? So just go, and you know, it's here I go. I'm just going to keep going until I'm done with it. All right, and then we turn the music off. All right. Okay, locals were kept off the jury. Some jurors had to drive for close to 4 hours from Pendleton, 196 miles away. The prosecution was given all the time in the world to make their case. The defense was given a single day, and much testimony was disallowed. However, the testimony of Dwight's estranged grandson, Dusty Hammond, who was 13 at the time of the fires and was 24 when he testified, was permitted. Dusty had been having mental problems for some time, and the judge himself admitted that the grandson's testimony was unreliable. Dusty's testimony was the basis for the government's assertion that the first fire was started in order to cover up evidence of poaching on federal land. He claimed that he was told to start a fire. Neither judge nor jury bought this testimony, yet it is being broadcast all over the place as proof the Hammonds are malicious arsonists. On June 22, 2012, the jury threw out or deadlocked on all charges but two, the two fires the Hammonds admitted to setting. In sentencing them, Judge Michael Hogan declined to impose the minimum sentence, which is 5 years under the anti-terrorism statute, averring it would have been grossly disproportionate to the crime. He remarked that such a sentence would shock my conscience, and furthermore contended that Congress never meant to apply the act in cases like this one. Of course they did. Dwight Hammond was sentenced to 3 months, or they didn't care. Stephen was given a year and a day. The sentence was handed down contingent on the understanding that they would not appeal the court's decision. They were also fined $400,000. This, in spite of the judge's admission that the total damage amount to about $100. Failure to pay the fine would result in confiscation of the ranch by the BLM, which had been the goal of the government's long war against the Hammonds all along. Both served their sentences and returned to the community, but the government wasn't through with them, not by a long shot. In June 2014, refuge manager Chad Karges, K-A-R-G-E-S, BLM field manager Rhonda Karges, his wife, and, refuge manager and field manager, husband and wife, okay, and assistant U.S. attorney Frank Papagni, P-A-P-A-G-N-I, Papagni, I guess, who had prosecuted the Hammond case, okay, and his wife, and assistant U.S. attorney Frank Papagni, who had prosecuted the Hammond case, filed an appeal of the sentence with the Ninth District Federal Court, demanding that the full sentence of 5 years mandated by the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act, God, give me a break, be imposed. With Dwight and Stephen out of the way, the ranch would be sure to fall into the government's hands. Failure to pay the $400,000 fine by the end of 2015 would result in confiscation of their ranch. To my knowledge, they've only paid half that. God, they paid any? God. Furthermore, the Hammonds were forced to give the BLM the right of first refusal if they ever did sell their ranch in order to pay the fine. In either case, the land-grabbing BLM will have achieved their decades-long goal, seizure of the Hammond Ranch. This is no resentencing in a case. There is no resentencing in a case of this kind without the approval of the Justice Department. Clearly, the intent here was to make an example of the Hammonds, to send a message that any resistance to the federal government's aggressive tactics in their long war against Western ranchers will be mercilessly crushed. The Ninth District Judge, one Ann Aiken, got the message and ruled that the Hammonds be returned to jail for the full 5-year term, minus time already served. God! Another factor in the unusual sentencing appeal was the stance of Amanda Marshall, former U.S. Attorney for Oregon, who, while still in office, denounced the original sentence as unlawful. It was she who formally authorized the appeal. Marshall has an interesting history. She had never served as a federal prosecutor prior to her appointment by the Obama administration. Her previous employment was as a children's advocate in the Oregon Department of Justice. Prior to that, she was a deputy district attorney in Oregon's Coos County. She resigned her U.S. attorney position last April, claiming to be suffering from post-traumatic... Let me turn the page... Stuck. Post-traumatic stress disorder. The trauma here was no doubt the scandal surrounding her stalking of Assistant U.S. Attorney Scott M. Caron, who says she had been bombarding him with unwanted text messages, phone calls, and other communications for over a year. Caron filed a hostile workplace environment complaint against her, claiming she followed him after work hours and drove by his house, in addition to sending numerous emails. I think I remember hearing about this. The Justice Department launched an investigation, withdrawing Marshall's security clearance and essentially making it impossible for her to continue as U.S. attorney. A U.S. attorney whose mental stability is at least questionable, a vindictive cabal of government bureaucrats intent on stealing property they have long coveted under color of law, and now a howling lynch mob of left-leaning Twitterers who hate rural folks, and especially ranchers who are professed Christians. These are the people who are celebrating the martyrdom of the Hammonds, denouncing them as arsonists and welfare bums out to steal public land. While the focus among vaunted civil libertarians is the resentencing and mandatory minimums, the fact is that Hammonds should never have been prosecuted to begin with. Their long agony is a clear case of government persecution motivated by avarice and politics, for this is a warning to anyone who opposes the federal government's campaign to retain and expand its ownership of huge swaths of Western land. Consider the scope of their Western empire. They currently control more than 80% of Nevada, approximately half of California, Utah, Oregon, Idaho, Arizona, and New Mexico, 42% of Wyoming, 36% of Colorado, and 30% of Washington and Montana. And as the Hammond case dramatizes, they want more. And you add to that, just a side note, if you add to that Native American reservations and state land and whatever, I mean, a lot. Here in Arizona, as big as it is, only about, I think it's 13 to 16% of it is owned in private hands. 13 to 16%. The rest is, reservation or, I hate that word, reservation, Indian reservation. The reservation, I hate that word because one, it's not reserved in anything anyway, but I'm just like, oh, these guys. So, really what they're saying is the people have a small percentage. The big giant chunk goes to the federal government that needs to stop right away. That's my vote. Maybe what this is building up to. The response of the defenders who are rallying around the Hammonds and demanding the privatization of the refuge is an act of civil disobedience that is both heroic and pathetic. The former because it limbs, L-I-M-N-S, I guess that's a word, limbs, or maybe that's supposed to be limits, what would have been the response of ordinary Americans in better days, and the latter because those days are long gone. I would not be the least surprised if the feds go in there, guns blazing, while our urban elites and their lower middle class imitators dance around the resulting bonfire just as they did during the Waco massacre. Justin Raimondo is editorial director of antiwar.com. This is what it really is about. If you lived in the West during the late 70s, when all this, you know, we talked to Patrick Wood, this is all part of this technocracy rising, Brzezinski, Bilderberger, Rockefeller, kind of we rule you, take over, and here it starts, and it goes into, you know, the Trilateral Commission and the secret handshake people of whatever the heck, and it goes into the United Nations, the Kyoto Treaty, the global warming, Agenda 21, 2030 goals of we're sustainable, whatever the heck, and this is part of that, is getting the land. Governments are there to what? I don't know, defend the rights of the individual and not rule them or take all their stuff or not allow them. What is the purpose of government? I mean, it's like government is, the end is its own means, its own desires, its own what they want to do. I remember a scene from Braveheart where William Wallace goes to the nobles and he says, "You guys think that the people are there to provide you with riches. And I say that your riches are there to provide the people with freedom. And I intend to go give it to them." Ammon Bundy. These guys understand what this battle is. So while a lot of people are criticizing, is this the time? Is this the time? Is it the time? I don't know. Why not? You know, this is a perfect example of the Hammonds went and served their time and they're going in to do whatever. And I'm going, all right, well, they may be out of it. But, you know, the other guys get to do whatever they want. The longer they hold this out, the more this kind of information comes out about what's really going on. As the economics, you know, come, you know, what's the Fed, what are they going to do? You think they don't read this stuff? They don't see it? Some of these guys, hopefully they do. Hopefully they understand what the real issues are. Hopefully they understand what side they're on. Hopefully that they see that they're the bad guy. And some of them don't care. They're mercenaries. They, you know, yeah, I'm here because I'm the man. But what happens when they start going up against guys that served in the same units, the same wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, and the same, and they have a totally different opinion? It's all about what? Public opinion. Who are the bad guys, and how can you tell? There are those that just want to be left alone, and they them those that just won't leave them alone. Assuming we can, sooner or later, we'll get Ammon on. We'll have Rick Santelli, you know, the journalist up there covering it. We'll make an attempt to get him on. Yeah, see if you can get Rick on the show. We'll see if we can do that. There's, I think he's the guy that was up at Marble Canyon guy, isn't he? You know, the American Reboot, Redoubt, kind of call Ann and Barry up there. And that guy that had the radio program, find out who he is, get him on. I guarantee he's all over this thing. Okay, let's just do that. You know, we'll hook you up. We'll get taken care of. Now, we had Stuart Rhodes on, and he was like, you know, I'm not, this isn't the time. It's not, you know, because it's a Hammond, the people in the local community, and he just wasn't into it. I think I understand more and more what Ammon's doing. No matter what happens, they're not, I don't see Ammon as a giver up guy. There is no negotiation. They have a line in the sand, and they intentionally occupied, unoccupied, by the way, buildings that are not occupied in the winter. It's too uncomfortable. They don't want to be there and nothing to do anyway. They go when it's very nice and, you know, like they live the summer up there, the federal employees that are on the land, they're bureaucrats. So they took it over and they said, now we got it. Now it's ours. You know, refugees are now. What are you going to do about it? Well, fortunately, the 3%ers went up there to kind of make sure they didn't get Waco'd, you know, or Ruby Ridged, and I'm going to Mooned. You know, there was all throughout history, there's all anybody that resists long enough, you know, they drop firebombs from the air, helicopter kind of stuff. And it's always, you know, the aerial thing. Now, they have, as part of the terrorism bill, in the furtherance of terrorism, they go with UAVs, drones. They will make that a federal crime. And now you got to have an FAA approved, blah, blah. For this is why. Do you think, you know, Ammon and those guys don't have some drones or somebody got it? I got some drones. We'll go and take a look. You ain't got to leave the farm. You stay in there, and there it goes up, and put some FLIR, FLIR, forward-looking infrared. You can see where they come, and they go, you can't, you're not allowed, we're federal government. We got ICBMs coming, freaking Hellfire missile from, Longbow attack helicopter. We gonna rule you. And I think Ammon understands this. I guarantee it. Go listen to the shows that I've done with Ammon. Donna, in the third hour, put all the shows that we've had Ammon on in the links in there and we can talk about, so you go and listen to, we're just, we're yakking it up, man. Free will and conversation of, and I'll tell you, Ammon's not going to back down. And the guys that go with him, they're not going to back down either. And being men of faith. When the FBI comes in and they're negotiating with people, they got the, we got the negotiator playbook one and negotiator playbook, we're dealing with God. And it's a totally different thing. You better know your scripture and the law and the constitution of kind of whatever, and that it doesn't matter. They're not listening to you. Yeah, this is not going to, end well for the federal government. Now, what happens to Ammon and friends, I don't know. But I think this is where the line is drawn. These are the battle lines. And we've gone through this in the 90s in Nevada with Vince Aprinowitz, by the way, his new book, The Miskatonic Manuscript, it's really, it uses, it's a used bookstore that has all kinds of various different cool things. And, he's like, it gets into this mystery private detective kind of used bookstore guy that goes around different things, and somehow time portal, he gets back and doing big hunting game with, excuse to have a 50 caliber with a Tyrannosaurus Rex. That's what it comes down to. But so there's always a lot of gun stuff that goes on. The Vince Aprinowitz, how I've known him since back in the day in the 90s when he was an editor here in the Valley, and he went on to become an editor at the Las Vegas Review Journal. And he was always doing stories on this. It was Vince Aprinowitz. You go Vince Aprinowitz, Freedom's Phoenix, and you'll see a bunch of his articles that we used to archive when he was writing. They're all in Freedom's Phoenix. And I tell you, he was really, really up to speed on what the BLM and the federal government was doing with all the ranchers. All the stories of what was going on in Nevada. And there was a lot of pushback. And it finally got the last guy standing, the Bundys. And some of the last guys standing, the Hammonds, and there's always the last guy standing, and these last guys that stand, they go after them, they make examples at them, they need to have them be made really great good examples of this is going to happen to you if you don't, toe the line and sell to HUD, kind of, it's not yours anymore. History. Alternative media. The real news. The lamestream media, the media so last century, cannot keep up with this story. They cannot understand it. They don't want to. They don't take the time. They don't know. They're just distribution of information by government handout. And it's not going that way anymore. They have to control the flow of information. They have to eliminate encryption. They have to keep everything where you're out in the open under surveillance. They don't want you like planning something secret. Hell, they don't want you planning it overtly. They don't want you planning. They want you to just suck it up and go on their plan, or you're on the list and you can't fly and what's yours is theirs now. I mean, this is going to start ratcheting down a lot more and a lot faster. So if you want to have some kind of a view of the tactics that they're going to use and what has to be done, this standoff in Oregon is going to be a big, giant, historical, neon flashing example of. And it's going to come down to resistance in whatever form. I think you need to understand all the issues around this particular one, and I trust Ammon to, for him making a clear distinction of what incident he's willing to use to make the point. It doesn't matter what happens to him. He's already won in his mind, I'm sure. He's brought attention to the people that need attention brought to. Now, what happens with that, I don't know. How long will this go into the presidential election cycle? When will it start to become a political issue? When will Trump say something? Trump mentions this, brings attention to this, takes a side on this. Either way, it's going to happen. They're going to avoid it like the plague, or he's going to go all in one way or the other. When that happens, I'm telling you, those are up against the wall, and they don't have control of the monopoly of information anymore. That's why, we'll talk more as time goes on. We made a bunch of changes. Got an email in the break looking at Derek Slopey working on the site. They made a bunch of, we have the platform, the foundation now, is that you're going to see, you know, continuous, you know, multimedia improvements on the site of rocking and rolling and whatnot. We can include all the dreams of everything. We wanted to be able to use Freemans Phoenix as a hub for just this kind of stuff. To be able to instantaneously, boom, broadcast in every format of done. And when it goes to, you can't censor it, encrypted files of anybody access. They don't know, nobody can take it down, and we don't have control of anyway, and bite me. You think I didn't understand what was coming? You think I didn't understand what was coming? You think inside I'm just going, oh, can you feel that? It's going to be ones and zeros. They're going to be getting a crap beat at them by ones and zeros that they can't control. Stop wars. Home educate. Peace.